Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, crazy, and crazy martinis today. A special four martini special at the end of the week. Jim, after this week, after this month, after this campaign year, after this campaign season, our listeners are entitled to a little extra crazy because heaven knows they haven't had enough already this year.
Our Wednesday post-election edition might just be like 70 crazy martinis. just go blotto. Just, you know, because I bet you a lot of Americans will be feeling that way one way or the other.
All right, let's get on to the good martini now. And just when you think it's over, it's not. The race is actually getting tighter for the presidency, which is not only good for Donald Trump, but it's good potentially for Republicans down ballot. The Washington Post tracking poll says the Clinton lead is shrinking. Here's the story from Scott Clement and Emily Guskin. Donald Trump has gained on Hillary Clinton during the past week, according to a new Washington Post ABC News tracking poll solidifying support among core Republican groups as well as political independents. Roughly 6 in 10 still expect Clinton to prevail, while the poll finds shrinking concerns about the accuracy of the vote count and voter fraud in the election. Clinton holds a slight 48-44% edge over Trump among likely voters, with Gary Johnson at 4%, Jill Stein at 1% in the survey completed Sunday through Wednesday. Clinton held a 6-point edge in the previous wave and a 12-point edge in the first wave of the tracking poll by ABC News Sunday. That was 50-38%. In a two-candidate contest, Clinton holds a 5-point edge over Trump, 50-45%. So, Jim, he's still behind nationally, but of course it's all boiling down to the Electoral College. And some of the state polls are looking a little better. We talked about the Bloomberg poll in Florida that showed him up 2. There are other polls, of course, that show Hillary up slightly. Also some polls that show him up in Ohio and getting closer in Pennsylvania, although Hillary still leads. So as we said at the outset here, optimism for Trump with 2 weeks to go, or less than 2 weeks to go now, and perhaps with that solidifying Republican support, that could mean some good things for other Republicans.
Yeah, a couple of things are jumping out about this poll to me, Greg. One of them is, there are two ways we can interpret this. Either Donald Trump has had a really good week, and that despite some critical coverage and issues like that, he's had a good enough week to make up 8 points in 5 days. That's a really good stretch for a candidate. You don't usually see movement in a poll that fast, so that's solid. The other possibility is that the poll is, there's something wrong with it. Now, the sample's pretty darn big. It's 1,150 people across the country. Usually you get about 500, 600 in some of these polls. Now, what's I do wonder what percentage of the demographic that the Washington Post and ABC News are tracking, Greg. How many of them are multiple personality individuals who basically have, that Sybil feels like a Democrat one day, but all of a sudden, you know, another personality takes over the next day and she feels like a Republican. And then you see a surge. Because it would explain a lot. Because this is either he's having a phenomenal week or these results are really volatile. We'll have to see how things shake out. There's a theory that says that you get a different type of people responding on a weekend poll than you do on a weekday poll. We'll also, not every poll is showing, generally we're seeing a general tightening in most polls. And when we saw that first, that 12-point lead at the beginning of the week, there were people who said, oh, come on, it's not that much, that big a split. So far, that appears to be bearing out. And some good news. But then another weekend's coming, Greg, so maybe it'll be 14 by Sunday.
Who knows? Just reminds me, you mentioned that the people who have their minds changed on a day-to-day basis back and forth. I wonder if these are the same people who show up for the Frank Luntz focus groups at the debates. Who did you support coming in? And then by the end of the debate or the interview or whatever it was, everybody's changed their mind. It's always hilarious.
Well, he seemed more presidential than I expected. So I didn't like how she spoke about the issue. I shouldn't use the Southern accent because you can just as easily get the snooty urban elitist who's, I really thought that they talk about the issues a lot. They never say which issues, but they talk about issues, which is a good thing. So yeah. Also, let's face it. I've seen a lot of people in Frank Luntz focus groups of undecided, people can't see me making air quotes, who, let's face it, they're pretty darn decided. If you're citing what was on Drudge that morning, we know which side you're leading.
Give me a word or phrase that describes focus groups. Go. Not just kidding.
Count. Waste of time. I can't believe these people are allowed to vote. There's more than one word.
We like Frank Luntz.
We're kidding, but by one word.
I love that how he always begins, though. Oh, it's all in good fun. All right, on to the bad martini now. Let the laughing end. It's not just Donald Trump who is fighting from behind in this campaign. Republicans, of course, are desperately trying to cling to the Senate majority. There are a couple of seats that are really looking not good. One of them is in Illinois, where Republican Mark Kirk is finishing his first term. He's had a difficult first term. He had a very difficult major stroke back in 2012. He has recovered admirably. He is now trailing Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth, who is a multiple amputee veteran of the Iraq War. The recent polling from Real Clear Politics, there hasn't really been one since late September, early October, but at that point, Duckworth was leading by 14. A couple of other September polls had the race closer. Nonetheless, they had a debate on Thursday night, and at one point during the debate, Tammy Duckworth was talking about how she's proud of not only her own military service, but the legacy of her family as well.
My family has served this nation in uniform, going back to the Revolution. I'm a daughter of the American Revolution. I've bled for this nation. But I still want to be there in the Senate when the drums of war sound, because people are quick to sound the drums of war, and I want to be there to say, this is what it costs, this is what you're asking us to do, and if that's the case, I'll go. Families like mine are the ones that bleed first.
I had forgotten that your parents came all the way from Thailand to serve George Washington.
There's been members of my family serving in uniform on my father's side going back to the Revolution. I belong to the William J. Penny chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
So if you missed Mark Kirk's line in there, he said, I had forgotten that your parents came all the way from Thailand to serve George Washington, unquote. Her mother was born in Asia. I think their parents met in Thailand. She was born in Thailand, perhaps. The mother's actually Chinese. The father was a U.S. Marine, is of British heritage, and apparently his family does go all the way back to the Revolution. So, Jim, this is making a lot of people cringe today for a number of reasons. In addition to the potentially racially insensitive aspect of this, this is really bad opposition research by Mark Kirk's campaign less than 2 weeks before an election. You don't even know the basic story of your opponent.
What are you doing? What are you doing? And you could see this in how quickly in the post-debate statements his campaign was like, no. He was not making fun of her heritage. He was not making fun of her parents. Come on. When you're saying your parents came all the way from Thailand to serve George Washington, well, one parent is, lived in Thailand, is of Chinese descent, and the other one isn't. And the other one is the line that goes back to the Revolutionary War. It just comes across, as you said, cringeworthy. It's not the worst thing we've ever seen any Republican candidate say or any candidate say to another, but it just comes across as just bad. You're just left shaking your head and saying, come on. Mark Kirk can and should be better than that. And again, as you pointed out, not likely to be an enormously competitive race. It's very tough for a Republican senator to win re-election in a presidential year. But go out with class, Mark Kirk. Yeah, I'm assuming that was just off-the-cuff line, but people have two parents, right? This isn't even like opposition research, Greg. This is like biology.
Biology and biography, that does actually matter in these campaigns. You mentioned the Kirk campaign's response. Campaign spokeswoman Eleni Demirtas, a good Greek name there, quote, Senator Kirk has consistently called Representative Duckworth a war hero and honors her family's service to this country. But that's not what this debate was about. Representative Duckworth lied about her legal troubles, was unable to defend her failures at the VA, and then falsely attacked Senator Kirk over his record on supporting gay rights. So it's always interesting how the narrative quickly pivots when that particular question is not helpful at all to the campaign.
It's not like this is going to make or break the election, but come on, Mark Kirk. This is a classic ESPN NFL Live Sunday. Come on, man.
Or as Joe Biden's late mother might say, God love him. Poor guy. Speaking of Joe Biden, let's go to crazy number one. Joe Biden, of course, has been in Washington a very, very, very long time. He was first elected to the Senate in 1972. Then, of course, he became Obama's running mate in 08, and he's about to wrap up his two terms as vice president. But he might not be leaving if Hillary Clinton wins and she gets her wish on one of the most important cabinet positions. Here's Politico. Joe Biden is at the top of the internal shortlist. Hillary Clinton's transition team is preparing for her pick to be Secretary of State. A source familiar with the planning tells Politico. This will be the first major cabinet candidate to go public for a campaign that's insisted its focus remains on winning the election and perhaps the most central choice for a potential president who was a Secretary of State herself. Neither Clinton nor her aides have yet told Biden, well, guessing he knows now, according to the source, they're strategizing about how to make the approach to the vice president, who almost ran against her in the Democratic primaries, but has since been campaigning for her at a breakneck pace all over the country in these final months. That's kind of exaggerated. Quote, he'd be great, and they are spending a lot of time figuring out the best way to try to persuade him to do it if she wins, said the source familiar with the planning. So, Jim, it's always fun that they're doing this while still saying that they're not taking the election for granted. The idea of Joe Biden and his gaffes all over the foreign stage, he might be an upgrade from Kerry, but that's not saying a lot.
That really is setting the bar low. There are, you know, single-celled organisms that would do a lot less damage as Secretary of State than John Kerry. But, you know, Greg, he's never going to leave us, is he? Joe Biden will always be in Washington, always walking around, doing his gaffes, slapping the backs, telling people in wheelchairs to stand up, you know, smiling, goofing, laughing, bellowing out, malarkey! You know, he's just, it's, he's 73 years old, and he's just going to keep going. He's, you know, you can say things like the Energizer Bunny. I suppose we could argue that in the grand scheme of the Obama presidency, Joe Biden has provided us with a lot of laughs and not been that damaging that I can recall, Greg. Like he managed to not start any wars with his mouth, as far as I can recall, right?
No, but he did. I believe he did out SEAL Team 6.
Okay, so it was that. This is the guy who was chair of the Center for, like, you know, Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden, the fresh faces America's been looking for. can we let this man just enjoy retirement? Can we just let him go off and live his happy life? Like, really? Are you really looking at Joe Biden saying, yeah, this is the guy we need in Foggy Bottom for the next, you know, 4 years? It's kind of funny. I have a tough time believing that Hillary Clinton really genuinely wants to head into, you know, the world of 2017 with Secretary of State Joe Biden. I think this is the sort of thing you leak as sort of to be complimentary, to make Joe feel valued, to say thank you for all the work he's doing on the campaign trail. Hopefully keep him on good behavior. I assume, you know, Joe Biden and Jill would want to live, you know, happy lives in retirement at some point. I assume he wouldn't want to spend, the next 4 years traveling around the world. But we will see. You know, the new, fresh, exciting Hillary Clinton administration could end up looking a lot like the old, tired, boring Barack Obama administration. Same faces, new places.
Wow. I also remember during the 2012 re-election campaign when he said if Romney and Paul Ryan won that black folks would be back in chains. So
yeah, that's a good point. We should point out that he's not, you know, he's drank deep from the well of demagoguery when he felt like it.
Well, speaking of decisions that Hillary Clinton has to make if she is elected, and there's, as we just said in the first martini, that is less likely than it was earlier in the week, although she's still favored. But if she can't make simple decisions, she might not actually be able to pick a Secretary of State for quite a while or any other position. Wedged deep into the WikiLeaks releases, Chuck Todd of MSNBC, who is also host of Meet the Press and Meet the Press Daily on MSNBC, and that's where this clip is from, he found out how much time and how much effort is needed to put out one Hillary Clinton tweet.
12 people in 10 drafts to come up with a 134-character tweet from Clinton about the fight over a $15 minimum wage. They started with this. Every American deserves a fair shot at success with a true living wage. I stand with fast food workers in the hashtag fight for 15. And it's signed with an H. That signifies a personal tweet from Hillary Clinton. But some staffers were concerned that tweet was too strong. So on the second draft, they changed it to I stand with fast food workers to I applaud fast food workers. Draft number three, chief strategist Joel Benenson suggests blaming CEOs for advocating. And advocating for this version. With corporate profits at record highs, it's time for a real raise for all working Americans. Draft number four goes back to the original tweet. Draft number five keeps every American deserves a fair shot at success and then adds fast food and child care workers shouldn't have to march in streets for living wages. But that tweet was too long for the Twitter character count. In comes draft number six. That loses the hashtag for both space and because the group was conflicted about whether using the hashtag was, quote, too supportive. The next one puts the H, signifying the personal Hillary tweet back in. By so far, no evidence of her involvement, at least in this email exchange, of any of these discussions. The next one puts the hashtag back in, too. So we've now reached draft number nine. At this point, it was suggested that they drop the tweet altogether. But there was a tenth and final draft that they do go with. It's a previous version that was the H, but not the hashtag. And that tweet went out at 9:23 p.m. that night. The email conversation about it began more than 12 hours before that.
So, Jim, first of all, I endorse tweet number 9, which was just to scrap it all together. Secondly, we just found out that the ones marked H aren't from her at all.
Yeah. Which, you know, like, it's not the most shocking, scandalous revelation, but, you know, the idea that, look, most of these are being churned out by our, you know, campaign PR team, but some of them really come from the heart and represent Hillary speaking herself. Nah, not really. Not even those. Yeah. But as you're going through that and I'm listening to that, Greg, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm trying to think if anything I've ever written has had more than 4 drafts, including like 3 books. Like, this is, you know, 6th draft, 7th draft. It's unbelievable. You know, all of a sudden, Greg, I feel like everything I've ever written has been rushed and slipshod. Really kind of ridiculous that they would take this much. And I think, you know, you talk about analysis paralysis and the idea of having to run everything through a committee and it doesn't actually, nothing ever gets done. I mean, if this is how the Hillary Clinton campaign handles a tweet, is she just going to sit there in the White House for 4 years and just not say anything? You know? Wait, somebody else needs to weigh in on this. No, she can't. You know, we can't ever wing it. We can't ever speak off the cuff. You know what happens there? Dead broke. Comments like that. We can't trust her to speak for herself. So, you know, let's run it through 12 more focus groups and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, some would say this is a very interesting metaphor for the Hillary Clinton decision-making process. Somewhere out there, there's like some social media manager who's like banging the head against the wall, observing that, like, look, for most politicians, Twitter is a double-edged sword. And that, yeah, you can be really safe with it, but you're not going to build a great number of followers. You're not going to necessarily, you know, have things that go viral and people, you know, you can really get people to give you warmth and get a sense of it. Chuck Grassley, of all people, puts out some really wacky tweets sometimes. Ben Sasse has all kinds of fun exchanges with people. John Dingell, the former congressman from Michigan, is still on there. Man, he's got a wicked wit and kind of, you know, some snarky remarks that you don't usually expect to see from a former member of Congress. That's, you know, authenticity is the value of Twitter. And this is like, if you're wondering why people find Hillary Clinton not authentic, because she's not authentic, as that's pretty clear.
On the flip side, her opponent is fairly authentic on Twitter.
Yes. Even the spell check would do him a lot of good.
That's what Chuck Todd said. He says it's one draft for Trump, and he doesn't even use spell check.
So I guess you could say these are our options. It literally is the two extremes. You know, either you get the raw id directly streaming, rah, you know, the primal scream of tweets, or the legal brief that's been run through 14 different people, everything's been focus group tested, and absolutely nothing in it could possibly offend anyone anywhere, and is, you know, mushy, unflavored porridge in tweet form.
Well, enjoy your extra martini, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, and tune in again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.